You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to the fourth and final episode of our Decade in Review series here on the Tilehurst End Podcast. In the previous three episodes, I've gone through the last 10 years with Johnny, Sim and Mark, and now joining me to take an overall look back at the key moments, our team of the decade, and finally look ahead to the 2020s and what they might hold is Will Jones. Will, how's it going?
It's going well, thank you. How about yourself, Ollie?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It does feel very therapeutic. I think that's the word that Mark or Sim used in one of the episodes, that sort of going through these last 10 years, and we've reached the end of the decade now. Of course, coming to the end of the decade with Mark in the last episode, with Mark Byrne in charge. And we'll take an overall look back now, as I say, and we'll start with the team of the decade that we've been releasing over on Tilehurst End over the last couple of weeks. First release nominations in the sort of middle of November. Let fans sort of choose their sort of 11 and then form the shortlist, and there was a final vote. And then we've announced our final 11 and manager over the last couple of weeks. We'll go through that now, as I say. Brian McDermott is the overwhelming favourite for manager. I think we discussed him quite heavily under Mark. The first one that was quite tight was the goalkeeper. Adam Federici got the number one spot ahead of Ali Alhabsi, 44% of the vote. Thoughts on that, Will?
Seems about just right. And I think the close vote reflects that they both were the standout keepers by a long way in the last decade. I think Federici probably just gets it because he did help us to promotion right at the beginning of the decade. I guess the one thing that the shame with Adam Federici is that his actual season in the Premier League started off badly and it never really got going. And of course, then his spell at the club ended with that horrendous mistake against Arsenal in the FA Cup semi-final. Alhabsi's sort of, I remember when he first started, him and Jonathan Bond were terrible. I mean, Alhabsi's effectively mistake cost Steve Clarke his job, and they really were a liability. And then the way he just improved over his time in the club was remarkable. And, you know, at the end, I think it's a testament to how much is that he is rivaling Federici. And, you know, if the vote had gone to Alhabsi, I don't think anybody would have complained about that. And it also helps the fact that they're both were sort of great characters, very different, but they're sort of people you were pleased and liked that they were representing the club.
Yeah, very, very likeable guys. And I think both won the Player of the Season awards, I think, in consecutive years. I think Federici won it in 2014-15 just before he left, and then Federici won it in 2016 and 2017 after those crucial saves, helped us get all the way to Wembley. And obviously made a number of saves in that playoff semi-final second leg against Fulham as well. Federici, of course, over, you know, sort of here for a long period of time. I think naturally, when you're here for a longer period of time, you're obviously going to, you know, naturally make a few more mistakes over that period of time. But as you say, you know, Alhabsi started very poorly as well. So both keepers who had mistakes in them. But as I say, I think just about the right choice for Federici, obviously playing his part in that promotion winning side, and was very, very good, kept a lot of clean sheets that year. Moving on then to the fullbacks, we've got Chris Gunter at right back, which I'm sure is going to be a contentious choice. He won the right back vote, was 47.8%. Andy Yeardom came second with that with 40.2%. And again, as I say, it's quite contentious. For me, I would say Yeardom is perhaps an overall better fullback than Gunter if you're looking just at ability-wise only. But I think certainly, obviously, Chris Gunter's been here for a long period of time. I've not got the exact stat in front of me, but I think probably he's probably played the most games for Reading this decade than anybody else. What's your take on the whole Gunter-Yeardom debate, Will?
I would agree with you that sort of watching on the eye, Yeardom's sort of certainly going forward is better. I actually think there maybe isn't as much between them defensively as sometimes people give credit for. Often when I watch Yeardom, I feel that sometimes when he made a mistake and it was Gunter, he'd get called out for it. I think what with Gunter, he has sort of played the most games, as you said, in the decade. But what remarkable, I guess, is that so many managers kept on picking him. I mean, even Gomez picked him at the beginning of his spell. And I always think that's a sort of testament to actually a player's ability, because if they were, you know, if they were a mixed bag, then at some point you'd expect to drop him. So he deserves that. And, you know, and the way he just, the sheer number of games he plays, you know, he's never injured. And when he shows, you know, whatever his limits are, you can't fault his attitude. Yeardom is probably, and we'll maybe touch upon it later on the show about the wider team, but he's one of those players you think maybe if he was in a better team, would he be even better or not? It's hard to work out, but he's certainly sort of getting forward, has added something to the team. And then the only other names that come to me for right back are Andy Griffin, which feels a long, long time ago there, and Sean Cumming sort of did a job, but was, you know, the fact that his career drifted off so quickly afterwards, declined so quickly after leaving us, showed that he was a sort of a limited player, really.
I'm not even sure where Sean Cumming is now. I think he went to, was it Rotherham or Millwall after us, and I'm not really sure quite where he is at the moment. I think Andy Griffin came third in that vote. Just looking now, Sean Cumming's is possibly a free agent, I think, actually. So that tells you where his career... Yeah, he's currently a free agent at 30 years old, and he was at Doncaster last season, but currently without a club, Sean Cumming. So that tells you where he is. Moving on then to left-back, Ian Hart got that spot. Of course, someone else who was part of that promotion-winning team, fantastic. You know, from set pieces and deliveries, obviously got that. He was the one that got the assist for Ledgerwood's goal that took us to the Premier League against Nottingham Forest. Jordan Obita, obviously an academy player, came second with that one, 32.1%. Obviously played more games than Ian Hart. Obviously, as I say, one of our own in a sense. But any complaints with Ian Hart, Will?
No, I think Hart, like Federici, just gets it for his role in the Premier League sort. I mean, Obita may have won that if he hadn't, unfortunately, been injured so much in the last few years. And, you know, it's actually watching him at the moment, it's quite hard to know what level he's at.
Moving on then to the centre-backs. Quite surprisingly, actually, Liam Moore, you know, comfortably won this vote with 74.5%. Alex Pearce came second with 40.2%, just beating Kasper Skorks. He finished third with 39.1%. And this for me, well, I think you can give credit to Liam Moore. I think over the course of sort of the last his 4 years at the club, he has been, you know, good at points. He's been very solid. Obviously, captain now. And does lead by example, you know, puts his body on the line and whatnot. But for me, this vote is potentially a little bit of recency bias, because I think you look at that partnership that Alex Pearce and Kasper Skorks had in the promotion winning season, and it was just fantastic. And I think for me, it's a little bit harsh on Kasper Skorks to miss out there. And when you look at Liam Moore, you know, sort of three out of his four seasons at the club, have seen the team, you know, battling down the bottom of the table. Is it a little bit harsh on Kasper Skorks to miss out there?
I think so. I mean, looking at the percentages wise, you've been more 74% and Gorks 39%. That's got to be recency bias, because Gorks helped us win the title. And it shows you that, you know, if the younger fans don't remember him, and for those of us who do remember him, we kind of put Gorks and Pearce, we put them together more with the 106 team than the current team. And it was that we sort of took being challenging promotion for granted, and well, actually with us, we assure that we shouldn't. And Gorks being a part of a championship winning team is much more of a success than sort of Moore's, which is, you know, as we know, has not been the greatest period. I mean, I guess you could say that Gorks really only had one good season, was a mixed bag Premier League, and by the time we were relegated was really on decline, and so that might count for that as well. I mean, I'd throw a fourth name into it, and a player who is the only centre-back I can actually remember watching and just enjoying watching him. You know, you expect it to be players like John Swift or Rosario, you know, attacking, skillful players. But Michael Hector was at times a real joy to watch. They're both the way he's defended and took the ball out of play. And I sort of, like, you know, all we do with all our academy players, watch his career from afar. And I'm a bit disappointed he hasn't had a chance to play in the Premier League, because on ability-wise, you know, so, he sometimes would lose concentration, and his positioning wasn't always great. But ability-wise, I think he's one of the best centre-backs we've had at the club, and sort of certainly the best one, you know, better than Pearce and Jake Cooper. So I sort of throw his name in as a mix, but I can understand why he didn't get voted in.
Yeah, I think fourth in the vote. I think Michael Hector, of course, you know, he went to Chelsea and has become a product of their, you know, their loan system going on constant loans, never really settled anywhere. I think he's moving to Fulham. Don't quote me. I think he's moving to Fulham permanently in January, and hopefully that might sort of kickstart his career. But, you know, I think he did do very well with Sheffield Wednesday out on loan last season. I think Hull the year before as well. So I think he's probably still only about 25, 26. So, you know, plenty of room for him to try and get in and kick on with his career. Moving on into the midfield then, we talk about very, very talented players. And Gylfi Sigurdsson, of course, is the name that springs to mind with that. He won 84.2% of the vote, which I think is more than anybody else in the entire team in that poll, Gylfi Sigurdsson. And, of course, only played 24 games this decade, Gylfi Sigurdsson, in that second half of 09-10 season before being sold. Is it just a case, Will, of him just being, even though he didn't play as many games, you know, we talk about someone like Guntu plays, you know, nearly 300 games, and you compare that to Sigurdsson, 24 games this decade, is it just a case, I think we I spoke about this with Johnny in the first episode, is it just a case of Sigurdsson just being too good to leave out?
Yes, I think it is. But given that those 24 games were also right in the first 4 or 5 months of the decade, I can see it does feel a bit odd having him in for the whole of the decade. But you know, the clearly the standout player for the decade and one of the best players to play for the club and to come through the club's academy. And if you're going by sheer not just on ability, but it is a long time ago. But you remember just how good he was and how great it was to watch him. Then it probably is justified.
Of course, Cem Karaca'an, he came second, so he takes up that second midfield spot, doing a lot more of the hard defensive work you'd expect from Cem Karaca'an. It was a battle between him, Danny Williams, and Mikael Legitwood for that second spot. Obviously, Karaca'an and Legitwood had that fantastic partnership in 11-12. Out of those three, Will, would you have gone with Karaca'an?
Karaca'an's got the maybe sentiment of coming through the academy. When we've done our own Tyler Stend interview with him, we know that he feels a lot of towards the club. But mind you, Legitwood's now working, I believe he's now working for the club as well. So I think those two. I felt with Danny Williams was a player who was always a little overrated, though in his final season, he did start to show why people talked him up. But the other two seems a little bit flatter to deceive. So I think Karaca'an probably edging it is fine. I'll throw out another name of someone who I think is a sort of a classic example of what we've had over since that promotion, of Oliver Norwood, who's got a lot of praise rightly recently for his performances for Sheffield United. And we seem to have had a lot of players like him who were clearly talented, maybe didn't show their full potential at the club, but for whatever reason, because the setup around them, whether it was the players or the management or the off the pitch stuff, just wasn't right. So it felt like almost like a wasted opportunity when he was at the club. But I thought he was a player, when you watched, you could really see his quality. And again, one of those players where I just sort of enjoyed watching. You could see him really thinking, and his technique is second to none.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I think it was very, very clear the quality that Norwood possessed when he was at the club. He had a real eye for a pass, and again, maybe wasn't in the right team, but it is fantastic to see him doing so well in the Premier League. Three promotions in a row with Fulham, Brighton and Sheffield United, and fantastic to finally see him getting his chance in the top flight and rightly getting praise for it. Moving out wide then, the wingers, it was quite a comfortable win for these two guys. Jimmy Kebbe, 81.5% of the votes. And Joby Mackenough, 75% of the vote. Obviously, both key parts of the promotion-winning team. Joby Mackenough, captain of that side as well. No one really got close to him in the vote. I think Gareth McCleary was third with 32.1%. So under half of what Mackenough got. Any real complaints with Kebbe and Mackenough, Will?
No, I mean, Mackenough, with being the captain and his performances, even sort of from when he joined, right, okay, it was the last decade, 2009, he was the standout player under Brendan Rodgers and really led the team and carried it on throughout his spell. Even when he was sort of frozen out or looked like he was on the way, he sort of forced his way back in. Jimmy Kebbe was just such an exciting player to watch and sort of an enigma as well. The way his career just so quickly, and not just declined, his actual footballing career ended so quickly after leaving us. Just sort of adds to that mystique. Gareth McCleary, again, sort of over the long period of time for the decade, and has scored some really wonderful goals. So sort of deserves a mention. I'm gonna mention another name which will sort of few people's eyes will roll, but I thought Hal Robson-Kanu was a squad player, was actually pretty decent. And again, like Gunter, was continually picked by managers, so must have something to go there, and did score some big goals, but also flattered to see. And Roy Bearen sort of had his moments in his one season at the club, but was always a little bit lightweight.
Jimmy Kebbe, a poker player now, I think, which, as I said, as you said, just completely adds to that whole aura around him. And I think probably our dream interview on the Tyler Seven would be Jimmy Kebbe and trying to track him down at one of his poker events. Finally then, the strikers, again, a very comfortable victory for both players. Adam Lafondre won the vote on 76.1%. Shane Long coming second with 71.2%. Again, very, very comfortable for both of these players. These are the two players that have scored the most goals for Ed in this decade. I think Lafondre's got 41 in the 2010s. I think Shane Long's got 34 goals in the 2010s. So the two guys that have comfortably scored the most goals. Jan Kermagant came third with 26.6%. I think from memory, Noel Hunt was up there as well. and Jason Roberts. I think Pavel Grigoryev got one vote from the final shortlist, but Lafondre and Long will plenty of goals up there.
Yeah, they have to be the stand. You know, Lafondre for his moments in the both the promotion winning season and the Premier League, and Shane Long in, you know, when his potential really starts to come through, was just, you know, a real force in that playoff season. Jan Kermigam, another player, a sort of a joy to watch, very elegant player, and again with that sort of playoff season, it was nice to see him. You know, he was such a popular figure at Bournemouth and Charlton, and to see him sort of score the highest goal scoring amount, and feeling that we might be the club to get him into the Premier League, that was probably the biggest shame for me, was not him not having that chance to play in the Premier League. But I think he's the only one who, after that, who, you know, does a mention. You can mention Pogrebniak, but given I always thought, you know, given his huge wages,
yeah,
it was almost like we liked him because he was a character and he tried, but he was being paid so much money, he needed to do more than that. So I think that those you know, Lafondre and Long are rightly the first two, and Kermigan is the would be a very useful sub to come on.
There we have it then, Reading's team of the decade for 2010 to 2019. Brian McDermott as manager, Adam Federici in goal, Chris Gunter at right back, Ian Hart left back, Liam Moore and Alex Pearce as centre backs, Jim Carachan and Gylfi Sigurdsson in the centre of midfield. Out wide is Joby McEnough and Jimmy Kebe, and then up front, Adam Lafondre and Shane Long. As I say, please do go over to thetitlehousedend.com, where we've got profiles of all 11 players and McDermott, of course, and we picked up memorable moments for all of them as well. So do go over there and read the profiles of that. Also, over the Tyler Stand over the last couple of weeks, and still going on, in fact, is our Moments of the Decade series, where we've a selection of our writers have written about their favourite moments or, you know, sort of key moments that have defined Reading Football Club over the last 10 years. And we've discussed plenty of them over the previous three episodes of this podcast as well. Just to pick out a couple that sort of were highlighted in the series, you've got Liverpool away in the FA Cup, Cardiff away in the playoffs in 2010-11, the Southampton and West Ham away games when we did in fact win promotion the following year, the Bradford home, the quarterfinal replay in the FA Cup, it took us to Wembley in our, I think it was only our second semi-final in history, and then the Fulham home game and the Fulham away game in the playoffs in 16-17. For you, Will, what is the number one moment of the decade out of all of those, or indeed something else?
So it's got to be the sort of promotion season, that the Southampton and West Ham away games, you know, to go to your biggest rivals and to win so comfortably in the end was just, they were just amazing games to be at, you know, huge support in numbers and atmosphere. There was sort of the tension, and there really was a rivalry developing between those teams. And it just felt like, you know, little plucky Reading going up to these clubs who probably looked down on us and thought they're, you know, bigger clubs with, you know, more illustrious histories. And we went there on their patch and beat them and won promotion and the titles. So those are big ones. I think the Bradford one, because it was something new. I mean, I said earlier about maybe we were too long taking challenging promotion for granted, but reaching the semi-final of the FA Cup was new. We'd not done it since 1927, and I actually the original tie at Valley Parade, and then the replay. They almost had a slight feel of a playoff semi-final, the build-up, because you could see the fans. There were big crowds, but the fans were communicating on social media. There was a sort of a little rival. It was a sort of a friendly rival, and there really was a real sense of a big occasion and a real nerves and wanting to get there. And then, so I would put those ones. And one other moment that I'll mention, Ollie, is the sort of the 2013-14 season, the academy run. You know, the under-18s got to the semi-final of the FA Youth Cup. The under-21s, I think, is that won the Premier League Cup. And I think that's sort of worth mentioning. I mean, probably why it's gone off the radar is is at the time, I certainly remember being thinking, wow, you know, the academy has really come of age here. You know, that we're the results on the pitch, we're challenging and beating the biggest and best teams in the country. I watched a few of the FA Youth Cup games and the final against Man City, and there were some talented players. You looked at them and thought, wow, we've got, you know, a lot of players coming through here. We could have five or six academy players coming through. This is going to be an exciting few years we've got, and it's going to be great to see how these players' careers progress. However, as we know, actually, very few of those players ended up playing for the first team. And in fact, I've got the starting lineups in front of me from the Fulham semi-final, the away leg. And looking at it, the only player who ended up playing a decent number of games for the first team was Liam Kelly. I mean, that the rest of them, you know, some of them never played for the first team, only got a few appearances. Though, I mean, looking at the starting lineup of that game, the only ones who haven't actually made a career in the Football League is Nana Owusu, Aaron Cool, who sort of a real shame what happened to him, but, you know, had real injury problems. And then Harry Cardwell's at Grimsby, but not playing. But the rest of them have all actually made league careers. So, I mean, you could say that's actually pretty decent that they at least did that. But it's a bit of a shame that they didn't, because, yeah, I mean, I say, remember those two cup runs, and then the start of the following season, we were in a shaky stages with the ownership situation, and then Adkins was having to, you know, it felt like every game he was giving a debut to a young player. And it did feel, you know, Craig Tanner scored on his debut, Jake Cooper playing and scoring, Stacey, Cool. You know, it felt exciting, but, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, whether it's the players themselves, the way the club was set up, it didn't actually end up materialising into anything.
We did speak about it briefly, I think, me and Sim, in the second episode, looking at 2013-17, but really, we haven't really touched on the academy an awful lot in this series, which I do regret slightly, because it has been a massive success for Reading over the last decade. 33 academy players have progressed from the academy to make their first team debut in the last 10 years. And that's a massive, massive achievement, because I don't think many other clubs can really match that. And as you say, not necessarily, you know, players that have gone on to have, you know, fantastic careers. Obviously, I think probably the key one from that is Jack Stacey, who's obviously moved to the Premier League this summer with Bournemouth. He's played very well. He got man of the match, I think, on Boxing Day for them. And yeah, I don't think many other clubs can match that. And it's a fantastic testament, obviously, to Eamon Dolan, who sadly passed away this decade. But the impact that he had on this football club can't go understated. And obviously, it's fantastic now that the North Stand is named after him. So it's a real, real highlight from the last decade. All these academy players coming through, and it's always nice to see one of our own out on the pitch. I think it's been quite a good start. Reading haven't really been without an academy player in at least their matchday squad, I think, possibly for the entire decade. That might be wrong, so don't quote me on that. But I remember seeing some sort of stat, because obviously Abita's played quite a lot. We've seen Renamota in the last couple of years. And as you say, that period sort of at the beginning of 14-15 under Nigel Adkins, where quite a few of them played. So it is a very, very strong tradition. As we said, it's certainly, you know, right at the heart of Reading Will. And does that need to remain the same? Because obviously we've got this new training ground, Bearwood, which will obviously help keeping Reading's Category 1 academy state. The academy has to be at the heart going into the next 10 years.
I do think that that the academy's got an important role to play. And what I would like to see going forward into the next decade, and something that I felt the club maybe could have done a bit better, is actually integrating the academy players into the first team. And going back to that period, you know, of 2014, one name that always comes to me that when I think of it as a prime example of this is Jake Taylor. And one game that I recall that I think most people have probably long forgotten was the 1-0 win over Ipswich early in the season. And Jake Taylor scored the winning goal from that. And the reason I remember that is not just because it was, you know, a young player scoring his first goal for the club in the academy, but Jake Taylor scored that as a Reading fan. And you could see the way he celebrated, what that meant to him as a fan. And as someone who supported a club since the mid-90s, there actually have been very few players who've represented the club who are fans. And there's something sort of special about that, seeing that one of your fellow fans playing. And in recent years, we've started to see more of that. So I mentioned sort of Jake Taylor, then Jake Cooper is one who I think was also a fan. There was fairly low-key about that in a typical Reading fan way. And then Tom McIntyre, you know, the fact that he was in the away end at Brentford earlier this season is great. And it's going to be, I think the academy is, it has a real sort of role to play, but going to get sort of, it's just that integrating and sort of, and goes back sort of to Jake Taylor. he's a name that most fans will have long forgotten. He had only had one season involved in the first team, and he only played because there was a real injury crisis, but he played, he did a job. He was then sort of dropped onto the bench and out of the squad, and then came back on and went on. And I think he just had a role as a squad player, and I think that's something that academy players can do, that sort of transition. And they might go the way of Jake Taylor and end up having a career in the lower leagues. Or, you know, I think that the other person who you mentioned was sort of Jack Stacey. You know, at the period when he was starting to play, doing well on loan, we signed Adrian Popper. And Popper's never, ever been more than a squad player. He's still on the club's books. And ask yourself, could Jack Stacey 3 years ago have done what a Popper did for the club at the same time? Yes, he could have done. And it just feels like a missed opportunity that we need to sort of make sure doesn't happen in the future again. And there will always be a case of players who go on and develop later. But it would just be nicer if sort of squad player roles are actually filled by academy players rather than getting in these signings who don't really add anything to the squad.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I think, you know, you look at someone like Popper or someone like Sandro Weiser a couple of years ago coming in, didn't even play for Reading. And surely someone, you know, sort of in that midfield from the academy, you know, could have filled that spot. And as I say, I think one prediction I've got for the next 10 years is that Tom McIntyre will become Reading captain at some point over the course of the 2020s, which would be fantastic to see. As we say, I'm a long-term fan, a season ticket holder, and someone who goes to away games quite regularly. So that would be fantastic to see. Let's look at the club as a whole then, comparing them at the start of the decade to where we are now. I mean, in fact, we are better placed sort of in the table than we were 10 years ago. At the start of 2010, we were 20th in the Championship, 2 points off the bottom three. Currently, we're recording this on the morning of the 29th, so before the final game of the decade against Preston. But as we speak, we are 15th in the Championship, 8 points off the bottom three. We're actually sort of in fairly similar scenarios anyway. I think you look at the managerial position. Obviously, Brian McDermott had just come in. I think he was still in his caretaker spell at this point 10 years ago. Obviously, his first job in football, or his first job in the Football League, and having been appointed from within the club, very much the same as we are now. Mark Bowen enjoying his first managerial position, having been number two for much of his career, and obviously, again, appointed from within following the sacking of Jose Gomez. Overall, Will, would you say we're sort of better placed now or were we better off 10 years ago?
I feel that, I mean, we're a very different club from what we were 10 years ago. Yeah. If you look at it on terms of the league table, then it feels very similar in terms of where we're placed. But even the squad itself is very, the managers are sort of similar background. But the squad, I mean, thinking about it 10 years ago, there were a few sort of loan players, you know, academy players, but it was quite a thin squad. And apart from Gilfie, there wasn't really any too many sort of standout players. Was this time we've got a fairly big squad and some big money signings. And you have to remember that at the beginning of the decade, the club's money was really, the situation off the pitch, we were being very tight with the money because that's what was needed. And Medeski was coming to the end of his spell as chairman and was no longer investing in the club. The club was having to move towards sort of self-funding or, you know, making sure at least its debt didn't get too bad a situation. But we did sort of know what was expected from John Medeski. I mean, it might have caused frustrations, but we knew where we stood with him. Whilst I still feel with the current owners, they're a bit of a mystery. So on the pitch, sort of different squads but similar situations. I think off the pitch, it feels like a very different club.
Yeah, we'll talk about the owners now. Actually, and as we say, not really heard an awful lot from them since they came in 2.5 years ago when they were confirmed on the same night we beat Fulham in the playoffs. We've not heard an awful lot from them, but that doesn't bother me an awful lot. I think purely because we are still seeing the impact they're having because of the money that they're spending. You know, it's very clear, you know, they want promotion for this football club. You know, you saw that, you know, they didn't give Gomez an awful lot of time. We spoke about that in the last episode, that they don't want Reading to be fighting down the bottom of the Championship for a third straight season. And that's where they let Jose Gomez go. And it's clear with the money that they've spent, you know, they've broken the transfer record twice already in the last 2.5 years when they signed Sonny Aluko. And then George Puskas this summer, they spent an awful lot this summer as well on Lucas Joao coming in. They spent an awful lot of money on the training ground. So they're clearly very, very ambitious owners. And they do have that money to spend. But again, they've got, you know, they're restrained to an extent by the financial fair play regulations. But as long as Reading aren't struggling massively financially, we had that worry early in the summer where no one was really coming in. And obviously, there's been a lot of research recently. There was a recent Five Live report that which said that Championship sides have run up a record high total of £307 million in pre-tax losses in 2017-18. And more than half of clubs in the league are spending more on wages than they make in income. And I think that includes Reading in that. I think we spent an awful lot on wages over the last couple of years. And it's clear that the owners, as we say, have money, but they've got to stick to these regulations. We are still, as a club, in debt. I think quite heavy debt. I think the stadium is now under the control of the owners and leased back. Obviously, the whole debate surrounding that with Sheffield Wednesday and Derby. I think Reading sold the Mad Stad for a lot less than those clubs sold their stadium. So we're in a lot less sort of jeopardy of that coming back to bite us. But certainly the financial situation has to be kept an eye on, because we say Championship clubs are making a loss. A lot of clubs are now gambling to try and get into the top flight. I would certainly say that probably includes Reading, based on the money that we've spent. Certainly this summer alone, you know, for George Puskas and Lucas Joule coming to around sort of £14-15 million. And do you worry for the state of the club at all, Will, in the next 10 years? You know, if we don't get promotion over the next couple of years, you know, I think that Puskas fee is split over the course of 5 seasons, so it's not going to hit us that hard, you know, this season. But certainly if we don't get promotion in the next 3 or 4 years, is there a concern that we find ourselves in a bit of a sticky situation?
I think, yeah, there has to be a level of concern when the club is that in debt. And if you sort of contrast the current owners with John Medeski, who was at the beginning, whilst I mentioned Medeski wasn't investing money, you knew he had the club's wishes, and because he's part of the town, he wasn't going to let something bad happen to it. It might have, you know, if Zingarevich or someone else had turned around, it might have a bit of a managed decline, but he wasn't just going to sort of drop it. And I'm not sort of scaremongering or accusing that the Chinese are going to do that, but there is a difference between when you sort of live and you're part of the town, you feel a moral responsibility. And I guess there will always be that slight concern that what if the owners were just sort of just turn around, you know, or the political situation in China or something just means they just pull out. Where would that leave the club? That the one thing that I was initially a bit concerned with the owners, which has now changed, is the new training ground, because that just seemed to stall, and I was a bit worried. You know, why isn't the club investing in it? That's so important. I think the reports on the academy was that if we didn't improve our academy facilities, we'd lose our Category 1 status. So the fact that it's been built, the first team, I believe, are now actually training on it. That's a major promise and a real good sign. I think the owners need to find their Nicky Hammonds. If you look at the last decade, the thing that maybe contrasts this decade with the last decade is that sort of middle management between, you know, the on the pitch and the owners. And Nicky Hammond is always sort of described as unsung hero, and we haven't had that this decade. Brian Tevreden had a brief spell, but if you look at the transfer records, his transfer record, it's mixed, and he left the club very quickly. And maybe Mark Bowen was almost too successful, in that he won the confidence of the owners too quickly. And they decided, well, we like this man, he should be in the dugout. But maybe in hindsight, you know, in a few years, we might wonder maybe it would be better for him to be in that role. So that's my one thing, is that, you know, we probably need to find that man, particularly the way, you know, managers do change very often. You need that consistency.
Of course, we are currently without a technical director or director of football after Mark Bowen moved from behind the scenes into the dugout, and that leads us nicely on to the managerial situation going into the next decade. Now, we've had 7 different managers in the last 10 years. That of course, includes 2 different spells for Brian McDermott. Again, I've not got the stats to compare, you know, sort of how that compares to other clubs, but I think certainly in the last sort of 5 years, we've had 5 different managers in the last 5 years. That must be up there with quite, you know, one of the highest turnovers in the Football League. Obviously, Mark Bowen's contract, of course, is still only until the end of this current season, until May 2020 or June 2020. And so we might well be having someone else come in next summer. Is that the way that football's going now, Will? You know, you look at someone like a club like Watford and sort of the model that they have, you know, Leeds, obviously, before Bielsa came in, they turned over managers very, very quickly as well. Is that the way the football's going now? Is it a very sort of short-term game where, you know, you want instant success? If that doesn't come, then the manager has to go, and you don't really get these managers to sort of have, you know, Steve Coppell-esque stints where they're sort of here for, you know, 6-7 years at all.
Yeah, I think those days have gone, and the people who sent, if you look at the longest serving managers in all these days, they're either someone like Eddie Howe, who's a bit of a club legend and got a real affinity to the club and just is very successful, or or they tend to be smaller clubs who are sort of overachieving. So I think these days it's very difficult for managers to have even a bad period, let alone a bad season, and to stay in charge. And if they do get through that, it's because they've got the process. But there is just that cycle. You managers just don't get long in clubs anymore. That's sort of the way that football is, not just at Reading club. You know, you'd maybe like Reading to be different. But I mean, I can remember in various points in this decade where we've talked about this being a transition season, and people said, "I'm fine with that. You know, let's get academy players being mid-table." And then by October, people are sort of complaining because that's the way football is. And if we were to sort of ask all the fans, Bowen will be in charge for the next 3 years, but we won't be promoted this season or next season, would you be happy with that? Most fans would probably say no.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think when you look at the way that McDermott and the way that the Copper won promotion, that, you know, I think it was Copper's third season, possibly. I think McDermott, again, I think it was his second full season that we won promotion. So these things take time. But as you said, I don't think fans are necessarily willing to wait for that anymore. I think patience is very, very low. And I think, as we say, that reflects in the owners, in the fact that they want results straight away. And again, fair enough, based on the money that they put into the club, you know, they want this club to be in the Premier League, as we all do, of course. And that does lead me on to my final question of this decade in review. Where will Reading be at the end of the next decade? Well, I mean, I put a little question here. You know, will we be in League One first or the Premier League first? Of course, you know, we all hope it's the Premier League. And certainly if we're in League One before we're in the Premier League, then the financial situation might be very, very tricky indeed. But what does the next 10 years hold for this football club, Will? It's a very big question.
It is a good question, and so much of it will depend, I think, on the owners. But if you look at the trajectory of this decade, I think, to answer your question, League One or Premier League, in my mind, for a number of years, it's been League One. And sometimes it's felt like we're almost delaying the inevitable. And the two clubs that are examples of that are Coventry and Ipswich. And there are a lot of sort of similarities in some ways between Reading in recent years and those ones. The one difference is we have spent money, which neither of them, those clubs, had. But if you look at their attendances, they spent long periods in the second tier and their attendances just declined very slightly every year. And then it's only when you suddenly look back 5 or 10 years, you thought, wow, they've gone down quite a bit. And that's the same with Reading. If you look at the crowd against QPR, yes, it's on Boxing Day. Yes, it was on Sky and in the evening. But, you know, 5 years ago, that would have been 15, 16,000. And it's just that year-on-year sort of decline. It's being in the same division, not challenging promotion. So the crowds are going down. We probably didn't, when you asked the question comparing where the club was now to the end of decades, I think the thing that we didn't say was that the beginning of the decade, Reading was a top eight, ten championship club.
Yeah.
That's what it had been for ever since promotion in 2002. We were always in the top half and always challenging for promotion. We didn't always reach the playoffs, but it went down to the last game of the season. Apart from Yap Stamp season, that's not happened since what's 2014. We've had one season where we've got to the last game of the season with a chance of promotion. So actually, we might be spending big, but our stature is in the bottom quarter of the championship, and that's the sort of that reflects the players you're going to attract and where you're starting it. So that's my feeling, is that we'll probably, League One is more likely than the Premier League. And I don't, unless we get a good management and get lucky sort of with a group of players, I feel that's where we're at. I think that's sort of where we're at. And we will always need to sort of go back. We're back to where we were as a club, which is we're a small club in the Championship. In some ways, I think that's more natural for Reading. And maybe that's sort of a build up. I just hope that we don't have to go down to League One to go back up.
I think that's my feeling as well, really. I think you talk about stature, and it does very much feel as though we are almost back to where we were, you know, sort of at the start of the century, really. We were almost punching above our weight, you know, between sort of 2005 to 2014-ish, you know, sort of being consistently towards the top end of the Championship, obviously in the Premier League for a couple of years as well. And it's almost a bit of a debate, really. You know, should that now become the expectation? Should that become the norm? And obviously, Reading have had a very, very poor couple of years, you know, 20th two seasons in a row. As you mentioned, we had that anomaly season, you know, where we finished third. But even before that, I think 19th and 17th in the table was where we finished. So certainly in terms of the last sort of 6 years, you know, sort of an average league position. Obviously, that third place finish will see that average hike a little bit. But again, it's probably only really around sort of mid-table in the Championship based on the last sort of 6 years. And as I say, I'm a little bit more optimistic. I think, as you say, if we can get, you know, that right balance of players, and there's certainly quality in the current squads. I think on paper, you look at the team now compared to 10 years ago, and it probably is better on paper. As you say, you know, we've got the likes of George Puskas, again, not been necessarily firing, but certainly a very, very good young talent. The likes of John Swift and Ovi Ajar in the midfield. The defence is relatively solid. You know, you look at Liam Moore, Matt Miazga and Michael Morrison, all good centre-backs. And as you say, really sort of only 10 years ago, the standout player was Gylfi Sigurdsson, who would go on to leave a few months later. And then obviously Shane Long came to fruition. But I'd say the squad on paper is potentially better. But obviously, you know, 10 years ago, you had that fantastic team spirit that Brian McDermott fostered and obviously got us to the playoff final and then promotion the following year. And I can only hope that, you know, I said with Mark on the last podcast, I've been pleasantly surprised by sort of the start of Mark Bowen's reign. And as you say, you know, it's still very, very early days and his contract is only until the end of the season. But I'm relatively optimistic that this might just be post-Christmas cheer or sort of New Year's resolutions or whatever. But I'm still, I'm fairly optimistic about going into the next decade. As I say, the finances are probably the one thing that concern me a little bit, if the Chinese lose interest or whatever. Or if we don't get promotion, that, you know, all these transfer fees that we paid, you know, come back to bite us in a sense. But it's sure to be an exciting next 10 years. And that does round off our decade in review, and indeed the end of the decade for the Tyler Stem podcast. Of course, the decade that the website was set up by one Daniel Wimbush, and of course, the podcast coming in as well. And it's just the final podcast of 2020. We won't be going anywhere, of course. Plenty more in your podcast feeds over the next decade. But Will, thank you very much. You've had the honour of being the last ever guest in the 2010s.
Oh, thank you very much. What an honour. And have a good new year, Ollie, and all the listeners.
Thank you very much, yeah. And I echo that statement as well. Have a fantastic new year. As I say, we'll be back in 2020. I think Mark will possibly be back either before or after the Blackpool FA Cup game for the main show return. Hope you have enjoyed this four-part mini-series looking back at the last 10 years. Going from 2010 to 2019. And of course, this episode, looking at our team of the decade, moments of the decade, and looking ahead to where Reading will be in 2020. Have a fantastic new year, and come on, you Ars.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.